Greetings, everyone. It's another week and another episode of the podcast. Sometimes I interview strangers, sometimes I interview dear friends. And this week's guest, Jeff Miller, is a dear friend who I met when he was just a teenager. In the years that have elapsed, Jeff's had many adventures, and I've kind of just been watching from the sidelines as he gallivants around this world on his bike. So it was with great delight that I discovered that he's become somewhat of an amateur filmmaker, and he's chronicling little bits of his travels right now in Latin America. You'll find a link to his YouTube channel, Slow Road South, in the episode show notes, as well as on the treasures page of the website. I can't even tell you how fun it is to realize that someone that I knew when they were young is doing such great work, hopefully changing the hearts and minds of people all over the world. We talk about his YouTube channel, we talk about a few miracles that he's had along the way, and really, it was just incredible to be back in contact with him. And honestly, I was a bit nervous about emailing him and asking him to be on the podcast, but he replied right away and said, absolutely. So Jeff found the time in the middle of another grand adventure to talk with me and share a little bit about how his travels and his meeting of strangers has changed his life. And so with that, here's another episode of the podcast.
I mean, you know, first of all, if you're looking for inspiration, I recommend riding a bicycle at night. Things come through. But yeah, it was just this overwhelming feeling that just, you know, there was some lightning off in the distance. It was purple. So the sky is kind of lighting up in patches and, you know, I'd met two people on that route from Kansas to Oregon that had, ridden Latin America. And so I think that was kind of percolating in my head of like, wow, if these guys could do it, I could do it. You know, that like, it suddenly became like tangible and not just like, oh, that's beyond me. It's like, I know people who have done it. Yeah. And you know, I'm riding and yeah. I mean, I guess I didn't hear like a voice come down from the sky, but yeah, it was just this feeling that filled me with very specific, I don't know, words or a message or something that, no, you need to, you can, and you need to. And even if you fail, like the important thing is to really give this a try.
As a human being, how would you self-describe if you had to go to a conference? I love that you're laughing about it, like a conference or a party or anywhere, you know. Yeah. And you could say, hey, this is who I am, you know, I'm a Scorpio with a Virgo rising or something, you know, whatever. How do you self-describe? How do you introduce yourself?
Well, I gotta tell you, this question is a bit of a stumper, and I understand why, because I think maybe you can infer something about me when I say that, well, you ought to ask a sampling of people that like me and don't like me, and then the average of their answer is probably more to the point. But I suppose I would say that, you know, I'm a traveler, I'm a lover of, you know, novelty, I'm a communicator, you know, I love language, I love kind of seeing what's out there. I've just been really curious to kind of see what's beyond Kansas, since I was little and finally got to moving, you know, and got to seeing what was going on beyond. And I mean, you know, all of that's on a good day, hopefully, you know, bring good light and energy to people. On bad days, I'm incredibly anxious and selfish and, morose, you know, kind of swing back and forth, I try to get out there and let people know where I'm from so they can understand more about my part of the world. And I try to get in there and understand more about other people's reality, and the world just keeps getting bigger that way.
And I would love just for my listeners to kind of, I mean, what number of trip is this to Mexico or out of the country? What number is this?
Well, so I did my very first trip. I set out from Kansas and I made a loop around the southeast of the United States. And that took about a year and a half. And then I
rode. On your bike.
On a bicycle. Yeah. On a bicycle. All this is on a bicycle. And then later on, I rode from Kansas out to Oregon, where I'd met, you know, you years ago. And then now I'm kind of on the third round of traveling in Latin America. So back in 2019, I left Northern Oregon to make my way down into Baja California. And my idea was to ride all the way to Argentina. But of course, what happened in early 2020, everything kind of got put on pause. So I got caught in Southern Mexico, ended up coming back to the United States, you know, working, saving up some more money until borders opened up again, and even just small towns. I mean, when I got back to Mexico, it was pretty evident that, you know, even towns had put up barriers, you know, to entry. And so I made it back in 2021 to start riding again from Mexico City, and I made it to El Salvador. And then left my bicycle there, came home. Some friends were getting married. Some other friends were having babies. And so I was with people for a while. And then I came back. And about a year ago exactly, I started out in El Salvador. And now I have made my way down to South America. So I rode to Panama, took a plane because you can't cross the Darien Gap on a bicycle very easily. So I took a plane from Panama City down to Lima, Peru, and now I've worked my way back up to just north of Bogota, Colombia. So that's where I'm at now. So this is kind of the third chapter of this Latin America trip.
You are amazing. There are, you know, days like that I just am like, I don't even want to get out of bed. I want to get out of bed. And here you are. But this does come with the caveat that you are quite a bit younger than me and you have more energy. And that's great. Great.
Well, there's good food down here too. That helps a lot, you know?
Oh my gosh. And you speak fluent Spanish, of course, which I think is so groovy. Part of the fun of watching your YouTube channel and your adventures is that you're just like all over the place, charming people left, right, and center. They, you know, a particular one that I really loved is when you were with that family and there was that recipe that he was showing you how he made that food. And, you know, by the end of the video, I just thought, gosh, I feel like I've sat with this family. I've had a meal with them. They're so joyful and welcoming and open. And I just love them. I don't know them. I've met them through you. Through this video, but you are very adept at creating a safe place, a safe space for both the people that you're interviewing and that you're showing. You know, and you introduce them so beautifully to the audience who's watching your YouTube video. And I've just come away with this really beautiful notion that, you know, we're all in this together and I want to eat that guy's food. But not only that, I kind of just want to go home with that family and hang out with them for a while. You're very good at it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Well, the Ortiz family was very special in that it was a coincidence of very friendly people that were very interested in sharing with me. I mean, because literally one day I just showed up in their kitchen and had some food and it just knocked my socks off. And I just started talking to the family. And that evolved into, hey, could I come by and film a couple things, you know, now and again, to, hey, how would you guys, you know, how would it be for you to me just be around in this kitchen with a camera filming anything and everything for, you know, the next week? And that was very nice of them to do because, you know, they were surrounded by other kitchens. And so there's kind of self-conscious of like, why is there this hairy white guy filming everything here and not in the other places? And asking all these questions, and I'm going up to random customers and being like, hi, I'm blah, blah, blah. I'm making this thing that you have no idea about. Could I interrupt your lunch to talk to, you know? And so they were very, very kind to open up like that. And what was surprising to me is you brought up the father preparing that recipe, the seco de pollo, which is like a traditional chicken preparation in Southern Ecuador. And at first, when I spoke to his daughters, they were like, oh, dad doesn't really want to participate, you know, in this, if we could just kind of leave him out of that. And he ended up being the most active, interested in sharing, oh, let me show you this. Sure. Meet me at, you know, 4 a.m. We'll open the restaurant. I'll tell you everything. I'll tell you about my life, my marriage. You know, I'll take you out to my farm and show you where I grow all these crops that I cook up later. I mean, he was just a marvelous human being. And, you know, in that video too, you see the food forest that he's created. I mean, people talk about, oh, permaculture and a food forest in the United States, but this guy converted a patch of scrubland into, you know, it was like Willy Wonka's chocolate factory, but for fruit. I mean, he's got cacao and papaya and pineapple and 3 different types of bananas and 2 different types of oranges. And he grew this special plant because his wife can't eat acidic oranges. So he grew a different tree. And I mean, just beautiful, you know, and the fluidity of it that he's managed to accomplish. He's created a paradise out there. Anyway, so what I found with that project, because it was my biggest project so far by a long shot, is that finding the right subjects is crucial, and just the right physical space. You know, the fact that the kitchen even had a window pointing out that I could be on the other side of a window and like stick a camera inside the kitchen and film them from this angle, you know, it all really came together and it was very educational about the whole process. So I'm really glad you enjoyed it. Thank you for watching that. I appreciate that.
Well, I have to tell you that obviously for the podcast as well, it does depend on the interview subject, how good the podcast is. And so far you're doing okay. So
good. Good. I'm so glad.
Did you grow up in a religious household? Like, what did that look like for your family?
Yeah, so I grew up in Lawrence, Kansas, which is a kind of a liberal college town, blue dot, red state sort of situation. And I grew up in the Unitarian Fellowship. My grandmother had actually helped to found the Unitarian chapter there in Lawrence with my grandfather. And so, you know, we were not like every Sunday kind of people, but I would go regularly and I still identify as Unitarian. It was a rather secular fellowship, and rather than a presentation by I forget the word they even used, because at that point they didn't have a pastor or a priest or anything like that. It was literally, you know, oh, we have this grad student from the University of Kansas to come in and present their research, and then we'll ask them questions. Or we have a county commissioner here to talk about the new zoning something, something, and the implications. And then all the adults go downstairs, and they drink coffee, and they eat donuts, and blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, us kids, it was arts and crafts. Literally, we would go outside and hug trees. You know, we would do religious education where we would go and visit different congregations, the local mosque. I remember we visited Mennonites, Quakers. We visited several like Jewish services. I mean, you know, just all around town because they wanted to give us a general idea of the religious experience in town. And I thought it was very cool. They don't actually tell you about Unitarianism until you're 13. And that's if you want to hear about it. They say, okay, you've been to all these other services and congregations. If you want to join any of them, you have our blessing. You know, we'll come back anytime you want. But this day at this hour, if you are interested in what it means to be a Unitarian, you are welcome to join us and we will tell you about it. And then you can go from there. I loved how little force there was on it. So to say that I had a religious experience growing up, I suppose so, but never anything actually cultivating like a belief in God or a creator or, you know, anything kind of that specific. No. And I think honestly, growing up Unitarian makes it more difficult to come to that because you interact with so many different congregations and faith traditions in town, all of whom are speaking of their book as the literal truth. That you come away saying, well, no, then none of it. How could any of this be true if everybody's convinced of their thing and it's all different, you know? And so I think it actually made it more difficult to glom onto a faith later. But I am very glad to have seen so much of what was going on in the community. And not only that, but to have such a positive experience of religion, whereas I see many people my age now that were traumatized by their early religious experience and now are incredibly defensive around it or uncomfortable. They don't want to hear anybody's spiel about anything anymore. And for me, I'm just like, okay, yeah, tell me about it if you want to. I'll sit down, let's have a coffee, you know? And you get to learn about people that way, because their faith tradition, especially in Latin America, is a massive part of daily life and their family and their social life and where they see themselves in the universe. And so I'm just really glad to not have a chip on my shoulder about that. And I really thank the Unitarians for that. Definitely.
That is one of the more positive responses I've had to that question, quite honestly.
Sure.
I'm so curious. You know, you've said you've had these conversations in Latin America with different people. Is there a general theme about how they experience religion down there, you know, in the stories that they tell you?
So the two main branches of faith, and this is not covering everybody by any means, this is broad strokes, but the two main faith communities that I have come across obviously are Catholic people. Latin America is culturally, socially Catholic, perhaps in the same way that you'd say other countries are culturally Muslim. You know, I mean, it's just the air. It's the water that people are swimming in, right? And just about everybody was, I forget the order of the Catholic rituals, but, you know, baptized and confirmed and had their first communion. And you know, to the point that if you want to be married in a Catholic church here, you don't just get to pick the church you want to be married in. This was the case in Mexico, at least. You have to go to the one in your district that corresponds to your official address, and you have to prove all of your confirmations and first communions via paperwork. And sometimes there was a typo 20 years ago, and you have to go stand in line for 7 months. And anyway, it's just like that. Just about everybody that I encounter speaks of having faith, a belief in God, a belief in the Bible. Many of those people aren't attending Catholic Mass, perhaps only holidays, festivals, but everything still has the religious language. The calendars all mention all the saints' holidays, because there's a saint holiday for every single day. Latin America kind of went through that syncretic process, is that am I pronouncing that correctly, where Catholicism via Spanish and Portuguese conquest was kind of overlaid on the top of indigenous traditions. So often you'll find a Catholic church on a mountaintop. And they say, why did they come all the way up here? Well, it's because there was an indigenous temple up here and they raised it and they built a church on top of it. Now, what's interesting that I've found is that because so much time has passed now, the Catholic experience is quite a bit more diluted. You find very few, you know, dyed-in-the-wool, Catholic evangelists, right? Very few people are taking it so seriously and attending and participating in all of the events and taking the time to talk to you about it on the corner. It's diluted. And so now the Catholic tradition, in spite of the initial violence that brought it into the sphere, is now kind of the, oh, yeah, of course, you know, no problem, but, you know, live and let live. And, you know, yeah, we have a gay cousin in the family, and you know, Latin America is still fairly homophobic, but we're not going to make an issue of it. We're not going to talk about it. Now, since I believe the 1970s, however, you've seen a major entrance of what they refer to as cristianismo, Christianity, into Latin America. And we're talking Mormons, Jehovah's Witnesses, you know, Seventh-day Adventists, all sorts of kind of evangelical lines. And those people are charged up. Nearly every one of them was born a Catholic, and at some point became dissatisfied with how diluted Catholicism has become. And I mean, so now we're talking, you know, going to 4-hour church services that end at 1:30, 2:30 in the morning, going several times a week, you know, following a dress code, women covering their hair. You know, I've been to some of these services, and your people are up there in the front of the church, and the pastor is putting his hand on your forehead and saving your soul, and people are crying and shaking. And I mean, you know, I've seen snakes, you know, I mean, we're talking like that. And those people are far more energetic and dedicated. And they've almost become kind of a what would you call it? Like a separatist movement, I think, culturally within Latin America. They don't listen to the music of Latin America. They don't dance. They don't fraternize with a lot of people in their communities. They fraternize with one another in church. And, you know, regardless of how people are actually living their lives, they have to present this very hard line moral lifestyle, and there's a lot more judgment. And you know, that gay cousin, that is a big deal, and we might not talk to you anymore now. And you know, forget about any you know, gender queer identity or anybody kind of deviating from the very kind of what you would think of as, you know, traditional Christian family values. That's a big deal. And I got to tell you, I'm upset about how popular that, you know, Cristianismo has become in Latin America, because I think it's driving a wedge in communities and, you know, rejuvenating that sort of discrimination and just making people uncurious, I think. You know, unlike Catholics who are kind of, like I say, just kind of background Catholic, and oh yes, but that can also, you know, coexist with my beliefs in science and evolution, and I'm curious about the James Webb telescope and what we're, you know, revealing through that. Christians, they're like, nope, we've got the answers. Don't need to really seek anything beyond this edition of the Bible that I have in front of me. And not only that, I'm not going to read it. My pastor is going to tell me what's going on. I don't need to think beyond that. Why? And, you know, I'm not wild about that for anybody, especially kids growing up in that tradition, you know, because now we're seeing the first generations of young people that grew up in that. They didn't convert later, but grew up in it. And it's tough. It's tough to see.
Well, I think anything that kind of encourages separation or, you know, that becomes a closed in system, like scientists would talk about closed systems. You know, there's a reason that biodome, where was it, in Arizona, didn't work.
Yeah, Tucson.
Everybody was in this dome for, I mean, how long did they last? They did not last very long. Closed systems, like, they become stagnant and they begin to die because I do think at some point they become parasitic, you know, because the energy, just, there's nothing new coming in. There's no breath of fresh air. There's no new thought. There's no innovation. There's no adventure. You know, you kind of follow the same rote lifestyle and listen to one or two people. You basically give your life over, your power, to these other people. And you know, as the Netflix documentaries about cults will attest, like, it rarely ends well. You know, someone gets mummified and turns blue, and then they travel all over the US with their dead body. It does not end well. So that makes me really sad too, because, you know, also that they're locking those communities down and they don't want to meet other people. But I think a lot of people in the world crave that. They want to be told what to do. They want to be given structure and rules for their lives. You know, they want to be locked down and told how they should live, because the world is a scary place.
Sure.
And I think that these preachers, these people, they provide safety, or whatever they think of as safety. That doesn't mean that it's healthy or, you know, beneficial for the greater community. It just means that, like, that's what those people need. They're just different.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I've interacted with many good people, right, who form a part of that tradition. I guess what I have kind of taken away is that when I find a difference when I just meet people that aren't heavily identified with that community. We can have a conversation. We can learn about each other's lives. When I interact with dedicated Christians, often they just want to interact with you to hear those words, "I accept Jesus Christ into my heart." And that's really what they're after. And they're not really trying to get to know you. And, you know, obviously that's off-putting, you know, but sometimes they make great soup and they'll let you have seconds. So that's not a bad deal when you're out on the road.
You're hilarious. I will, you know, stop the world for a good bowl of soup.
I mean, I think first off, since I began traveling, instances of finding magic in my life have exponentially increased. You know, I realized I've kind of thinking about this, and I just realized, like, oh, when I started to get out there, that's when all of this started to really pick up. You know, when you're kind of getting out of your normal routine and having to, you know, just have a certain amount of faith every day that, you know, you're going to figure out where to stay, where to, you know, where to find food, where to find water, good people, support, you know, any of that. And I think the most dramatic example of it that came up was, so I went on one trip in the United States, and then I was riding my bike from Kansas to the North Shore of Oregon. And when I was in Boulder, Colorado, I met a woman and, you know, we were kind of sweet on each other and we were palling around for a few days while I was in town. And when I got to Montana, we got back in touch. Hey, let's meet up. You know, she had some vacation time and let's meet up in Eastern Colorado. So she's going to come out to Eastern Colorado. I'm riding my bicycle with a fella I'd met on the road. Very cool guy named Ajumal. And normally I do not ride my bicycle at night. Traffic, they can't see you. You know, accidents happen at night, right? So normally I would not do that. But because we had a fixed deadline to reach this town to meet her by that time, I had to ride at night one night. And so I'm just riding out on this, you know, empty highway approaching Eastern Oregon. So I suppose I was in, I forget, Idaho or Montana or one of those. And so, okay, some backstory. Ever since I was 11 years old, I had the idea that I wanted to learn Spanish, ride my bicycle, travel on my bicycle through Latin America. I just wanted to do that. Somehow I identified that dream and I put it off for a long time. And then I started riding my bicycle and through the United States, but oh, Latin America would be too much and dangerous. But that night, you know, people talk about hearing a message. That doesn't really happen to me, but it happened that night. I was out riding at night and I'm pedaling as fast as I can down this highway, trying to reach the next town so we can find a place to camp. And it just came through just as clear as day. Like, no, you got to do this. You have to. Like, if you don't give a take a crack at this, at this dream of riding your bike across Latin America, you're really giving up something, you know, in your life. You know, here you are, you're pretty young. You don't have major, you know, responsibility. You don't have a family. You speak Spanish. You know, you can give this a shot and you need to do that. And it just came together. And that was in 2018. And, you know, we're in year six of working on that project. And it's kind of become the axis around which everything else revolves. And it's not been without frustrations and setbacks and difficulty, obviously. I mean, it's not any different than normal life. But I've been really glad to have that kind of guiding light of like, this is your project. And it's important that you prioritize this. And it's important that you do the things you need to do to keep your body and your mind prepared to make that happen. And I've never before or since, I've never had a message just come through so clearly. And yeah, so I would consider that a moment of magic that inspired me and continues to. You know, but you know, magic comes in many, many shapes and sizes. I mean, I'd say I first traveled to Latin America when I was 19. I lived in Costa Rica for about a year and a half. And that's where I, you know, my Spanish first started to deepen. And in that time, I met a Mexican fella who invited me to spend some time in Mexico City with him. So I went and spent time in Mexico City. We got to be friends. I came back to Mexico City later after he was dating a woman who he would eventually marry. And as is the case for many residents of Mexico City, her family was from the countryside and they had migrated to the city in the late 60s, early 70s. And for New Year's, we went out to the family of her relatives that still lived in that countryside area. And that changed everything because that was the first time when I really saw non-urban, non-tourist Latin America. You know, this is still a small farming town where everything kind of works. I mean, you know, the people are trading dollars and cents, but things a lot more function on an exchange economy. And this baptism was a big event because you use the baptism of a baby in your family as a pretext to throw a 3-day feast party. I mean, bandstand and music and serving, I mean, hundreds of meals and the whole town comes through and people are bringing, you know, giving you turkeys to slaughter and prepare and rabbits and, you know, all the ladies in the community come around and they're cooking these meals. I had just never seen food like this. You grew up in the United States and you eat your Tex-Mex, but here we are on the countryside and they're brewing up, you know, black mole, you know, in these clay pots, you know, I mean, as people have been doing for a long time out there. And, you know, mole is something that I think, you know, usually has about 33, 34 ingredients that require very specific preparation and a lot of work. And only makes sense if you're making food for 200 people, because, you know, you're not going to go through all that trouble to serve a family of three. And so seeing that food in its context within an older style of an economy and just the kind of, I mean, like I say, just the magic of how they've passed that tradition you know, it is women that are doing the cooking out there. That's still the case. You know, from, you know, mother to daughter and onward and maintaining that tradition. And you eat that food and it just, I mean, there's a reason that Mexican cuisine is like UNESCO World Heritage Site. I mean, it's brilliant. I mean, it just lights you up. It does backflips across your tongue. It's just, and to know that, you know, that came from just this little, you know, adobe house in the middle of the countryside with ingredients from right around there. And that people have just been enjoying and savoring that magic for generations. That's a very special thing. So I would say that as well. And then going on to see that food tradition all throughout Latin America and seeing that this is not something that you can go to a restaurant and order. Like, it has to come from the context of the family and the religion and the time of year and you know, it's completely contingent on that place and that family. That's so cool. You can't, you know, Google review that. You know, it's something older. And you know, when you grow up in the Midwest or surrounded by strip malls and, you know, Chili's and Denny's, you know, you don't see that. You don't see what that was. And that's how we used to eat. And it's amazing.
I want to go back to that first story because I find it so interesting that 11 years old, you knew, you're like, I have this idea that I should do this or I want to do this. And then, you know, presumably you put it off for a while because you were only 11. And then you're on this road at night cycling and you have this, I don't know, was it an epiphany? Did you hear a voice? What was it like this feeling it, but it seems like there was no uncertainty about what you heard.
Yeah. I mean, you know, first of all, if you're looking for inspiration, I recommend riding a bicycle at night. Things come through. But yeah, it was just this overwhelming feeling that just, you know, there was some lightning off in the distance. It was purple. So the sky is kind of lighting up in patches and you know, I'd met two people on that route from Kansas to Oregon that had ridden Latin America, and so I think that was kind of percolating in my head of like, well, if these guys could do it, I could do it, you know. That like, it suddenly became like tangible and not just like, oh, that's beyond me. It's like I know people who have done it. And you know, I'm riding. And yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, I didn't hear like a voice come down from the sky, but yeah, it was just this feeling that filled me with very specific, I don't know, words or a message or something that, no, you need to, you can, and you need to. And even if you fail, like, the important thing is to really give this a try, because, you know, it's rare that people are lucky enough to have a dream that they can carry, you know, for this long. That's not common, you know. And it implies a certain lifestyle for sure. But I wanted to kind of honor that, you know, honor that I've had this enduring dream and give it a run for sure.
And I do think, you know, cycling, you know, in Latin America, Peru, it's not for the faint of heart. You have to be in good shape.
I mean, luckily it's just, the difficulty, like the United States is the easiest, and then Mexico, you're like, man, these hills are big. And then Central America, like, it's steeper, and then you get to the Andes. Jesus, you know, you start having to factor like altitude into it. Peru. I mean, you get up to like, you know, in Peru, I think we got up to like, what was it? I think the highest was 16,000 feet. Like, yeah, like, you know, your brain's going a little loopy, you know. Now, the cool thing is in Peru, I mean, you know, and Colombia, right? They have the old tradition of chewing coca leaves, and that's what gets you through. That's what gets you through. But then, of course, you know, you cycle over these passes and you're like, wow, I can't believe it. And then, you know, you make it to the next stop, and here's this little old lady who's telling you stories of, you know, when I was 9, we didn't have roads here, and we had to hike, you know, 3 weeks worth of provisions, like, over the pass on foot. And, you know, she didn't have you know, La Sportiva trail running shoe. No, she's making it. So it's like, it puts it into perspective that, okay, yeah, people been doing this, you know, just incredibly tough. So, but yeah, I mean, it is lucky that it just gets harder as you go, you know, you get to work up to it.
I do want to say, I so appreciate your YouTube channel because I think you're really bringing a lot of beauty into the world, and this world could definitely use more beauty. And I think it's also a really great place for strangers to meet each other in the safe space of your YouTube videos and your YouTube channel. Like, how do you find your subjects? I mean, how did this happen? You know, why? How did this come about that you decided to do this?
You mean specifically filming things? Yeah. Well, previous to that, and I really appreciate your praise over this and how much you like this, but I have to say, I am still green behind the gills about filming. I'm learning. I'm beginning. I really enjoy it, but I am a novice. For first, I would write a lot. I love to write, and I would take pictures, you know, it kind of began with journaling. When I went on my first trip, I like adamantly did not want to put anything on the internet about it. I wanted to have an experience that wasn't like for Facebook, right? And I miss that. I do miss that. I have to say, like, not interacting with social media and not doing things that other people are going to see, there's something very special about that. And I think it's important to at least take some spaces to do that in your life, you know, in 2024. But I began to write and put out, you know, short things that I would write about what I was seeing and who I was meeting. But then I just realized over time, it's like, nobody reads, like people don't read, you know, my family, my friends, they'd be like, oh, that was great. You know, but you know, I wanted to reach more people about this because my angle is that I hope to be a channel for more people to understand the day-to-day realities of Latin America, because we live in an era and a country where the propaganda around immigration, around the Latino community, around the threat to white people, you know, in the United States is pretty loud. You know, we're talking about walls and bad hombres and all this, and, you know, and all the baggage we've had about Latin America for so many years about, you know, people coming and not speaking a high level of English. And so people just see Latinos as so simple and, oh, they're just such hard workers and they're sweet and they love family. It's like, I mean, yeah, but also like, they're just as, I mean, we're people, everybody's complex, everybody. And people have, and not only that, but, you know, Latin America just contains worlds, you know, that we don't know about and could really help us out if we did. You know, I think a lot of what American culture, like United States culture, pardon, you know, we are the Americas, United States culture is lacking in, Latin America just is full of it, rich, you know, in these social technologies that we have just let fallow so long that the muscles have atrophied. We've forgotten how to organize and be together and share space and meals and take our family relationships very seriously and our friendships that last years. You know, we don't do that anymore. So at a certain point, I just realized if you keep writing, you're never going to show more people, you know, what's going on. And so I started making some videos and just learning. And this is a great era to get into that. The applications, the free applications to make videos these days are incredible. Intuitive editing is much simpler than I thought it would be. And so I just wanted to start doing that to see if I could, you know, reach more people. And an interesting thing that I found is doing material in Spanish. When I was doing things in Ecuador, for example, Ecuadorians are just so happy to see their culture represented and their places and their foods and see somebody from outside like take it seriously. So, you know, as much as I hope for people in the United States to see this and say, oh, okay, this is not Narcos, you know, Colombia. I also, you know, just kind of want to send a love letter to these countries that are, you know, helping me out so much and teaching me incredible things about life and how to be in the world. So I think it was the kind of those two aims. And like I said, I'm beginning in it, I'm working on it, but that's what I hope to continue in.
Well, I think it's a great platform, as I said, to introduce, you know, people that we, maybe I'll never go to Latin America and I'm never going to meet, you know, these people. It's a great way to learn about customs, about community, about sure. others in a space where the production value is great, and just see how beautiful other parts of the world are, how lovely they are, how lovely other human beings are, versus the stories that we're fed every day about death and murder and narcos and all sorts of stuff. So I really appreciate, you know, your videos and just seeing the way that you're producing them. And what I really appreciate is your language around it, a love letter, right? A love letter, both to the communities that you're filming, but also when you put it in this video form, it's kind of this love letter out to the world about, see, this is how beautiful the world is, and this is how beautiful the people are that live in it. So grateful for that.
I suppose, well, I mean, not to kind of go off on too much of a tangent about it, but, you know, I think the last statistic I read was there are 40 million Spanish speakers in the United States. That might be higher at this point. But to me, it just feels farcical that there is still so little integration of, especially, you know, the immigrant communities that come, you know, to our country with people that have, you know, been there for a long time. And you know, even into the second generation, into the, you know, it's sometimes even in the third generation, you really start to see people mingling. And that's too long, you know. I mean, I just see the United States, from what I, you know, pick up from what I read and just the general sentiment I'm absorbing, is people in the United States are like in distress right now. Like, it just does not seem like a particularly happy era. And, you know, I don't mean to speak flippantly about it. Like, I'm not having to work 60 hours a week to support a family as a single parent, or, you know, in some, like, you know, really stressful situation. But I guess something I do see is that a lot of the ways that people generate happiness and meaning in their lives here don't require income. It's about taking a relationship seriously. Yeah. It's about maintaining contact. It's about spending time. It's about making a priority of food and celebration. And, you know, I mean, not to get too hokey about it, because, you know, people talk about that, but the obstacle is not dollars. The obstacle is regenerating those aspects of our culture that we've either let fallow or that we never had in the first place. And we can learn a lot. We can learn a lot about how to lead good lives, you know, from the rest of the continent. You know, that's just
from the rest of the continent. Listen, yeah. Every time I open the newspaper, or no, wait, those don't exist anymore. I just dated myself. Every time I open the news on my phone, they are saying, you know, there's this epidemic of loneliness and depression and isolation and sorrow. And I just think to myself, you know, you just explained that 3-day celebration for that baptism where the community comes together, everybody parties, has a good time. They celebrate the baby. They celebrate each other. They laugh, they dance. They're just, we don't have that in the US. Like, we're all like in these, I don't know, not me. Okay. But like, so many people are self-isolating, and I don't know what it is, but we need more community. We need more conviviality. We need more relationship. Like, the human heart calls for relationship and relatedness, and also feeling like you belong. Belonging is important. And so that's what's lacking in our so-called superior culture. I mean, everybody's like, oh yeah, the North American culture, we're so superior to everyone else. Yet everybody's lonely and sad and depressed. So something's not working.
Yeah. Well, I'll say something to that. I think, you know, part of that myth that we have about, you know, the superiority of the culture of the United States, and that everybody is so, you know, jealous for what we have that they're willing to break laws and hop walls to take our resources, right? You know, if you talk, I mean, again, you know, if you can speak Spanish and talk to immigrants in the United States, a lot of them are very ambivalent about being in the United States. I mean, there's the people that are here for, you know, 3, 4, 5 years to work a lot, make some seed money, go home, start a business, buy a house, buy a car. there's people that stay longer that didn't intend to stay as long, but you know, you just get kind of caught up in, oh, if one more year, one more year, one more year. But I've never met, you know, someone that doesn't deeply miss home and under other circumstances would be back there. You know, sometimes people appreciate the American school system for their children, or now their children have grown up in the United States and it would be very difficult to transition them back to their home country. But in a vacuum, the reason that people are staying so long in the United States is because of our immigration policy that does not allow them to go home and then return, right? You know, in Guatemala, the daily minimum wage for a laborer is $6 a day for 10 hours of hard farm work, right? Come on, man. You know, even if you're not fleeing a scene of active violence, which does exist, you know, not unrelated to American coups of democratically elected governments in those countries. But if you're making $6 a day, you can't advance. You know, you go to Guatemala in particular, and whole towns are depleted because so many people have gone to the United States. And you see people who have businesses, people who have trucks, people who have, you know, a middle class home, they all went to the United States. That's always because they went to the United States and they worked hard and they came home. If we could revise our policy to allow people more fluidity, I think we would see a lot of people going back to their home country because, like you're talking about, the culture is richer in so many ways. You know, there's so much more fun and cuteness and good flavor and celebration and conviviality. You know, we're fooling ourselves if we think that people really just want the United States that bad. You know, they need to make some money because everybody wants to put, you know, advance the situation of their family. But as far as the culture goes, immigrants have very mixed feelings, in my experience from talking to people.
Oh, come on. Apple Garden is a thing. No, I'm sorry. What did I mean to say? Chili's,
right.
And Applebee's are a thing.
Applebee's, yeah. I mean, all of you combined Applebee's and the Olive Garden, two staples of American culture. Put that on the Mount Rushmore of good times.
Oh my God. I can't believe I did that. Thank you for saving me. I did. I was like, Apple Garden. What am I trying to say? That's not a thing.
That's it, my conversation with my dear friend Jeff, who I hope is blessed with meeting many more strangers who are as equally enchanting as the ones he's already met. I'm having such a positive response to the changes I've been making, my new podcast cover, my headshots, I'm starting a YouTube channel. It's just a good time in my life to hopefully be bringing a little beauty into the world. With that being said, please know that I'm all too human and I'm recording this in my closet. And I wish you all could see me scrambling in on my hands and knees, sitting on a case of honey, and recording the outro to this podcast. There's nothing glamorous or graceful about it. And let me just tell you, it keeps the humility high. With that, I want to thank Jeff Miller for being such a cool dude. Such a great friend, and for telling me his beautiful and gracious stories of meeting strangers, the food on the road, and sharing what he believes is precious in this world. Hint, partly it includes food, and partly it's other human beings, among other things like purple-colored lightning. I also need to thank the creators of the music used in this episode. Sasha End, thank you so much. Complete attribution will be in the episode show notes. You know what else is going to be in those show notes? A link to Jeff's YouTube channel, Slow Road South. His episode that we talk about, where he interviews the gentleman who is so excited to be a part of the process, has 59,000 views. You go, Jeff. I'm only hoping for greater and greater success, and I'm a fan of platforms that bring people together and allow us to meet each other in safe spaces, and that's what this podcast is all about. And remember, I'm always looking for ratings and always looking for reviews. So please, please do consider leaving one or writing one or whatever that looks like. It helps people find me and makes my world a little bit shinier. Thank you for listening. And here's my one request. Be like Jeff. Believe in adventure. Believe in strangers. You never know what kind of grace and beauty a stranger is going to bring into your life. And I did give a sermon on this before I left Santa Fe about how sometimes I'm in the checkout line and someone turns to me and starts talking to me. And I just think, oh my God, please, I don't have the energy. Please don't talk to me. But then I have to step back and think, you know what, Kirsten? This person potentially has something gorgeous to say, and you're going to miss it because you're lazy or you're just feeling like you're having a bad day or whatever. It's tough to stay in that place of acceptance and openness, but I'm trying to cultivate that now and be more mindful about it. And so, you know, that's what Jeff does. He's on the road. He's looking for adventure. He's looking to meet strangers and tell their beautiful stories. And you never know in your life what is going to be the next amazing adventure with a complete stranger, whether it's a conversation or exchanging books or sharing a cup of coffee in line, who knows? So be like Jeff, be open to the experience, be open to what life brings you. You never know when that meeting with a stranger, well, it might change your life. And that's it. I'll see you next week for the next week of the podcast. And until then, I hope your week is filled with enchanting encounters with incredible strangers. Now I just gotta crawl out of this closet and produce the podcast.